are just as great and powerful on their lives as for other tenants. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning, Mayor. Members of the council, for the record, Sean Jillians, registered lobbyist representing the Oregon Association of Realtors.
I want to remind people what I said up front, that not everybody is going to have the same opinion. Please just do this or do this. Let's be respectful of everybody here, regardless of their opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Speaking on the relocation segment of this, it was interesting in listening to sort of the emergency that we're facing in the housing community. That's something that's really been years in the making. We have been seeing a serious lack of supply for over a decade in the Portland metro region as far as keeping up with just our existing folks coming in. And then when you add on the immigration, because Portland has become so popular, you fall further and further behind. And our state economist has pointed out that we're tens of thousands of units a year behind and increasing. And I point that out simply to say that when you all make decisions, there are sometimes unintended consequences. And when you hear stories about people who are deciding to take institutional money to other places, not building here because they're concerned about the regulatory environment, or you hear stories about small landlords, and in particular the one exception, you hear a lot of small landlords who have a single family residence, they're selling them now. And that was one of the concerns we raised in February, is that people would just get to the point of saying, you know what, it's not worth owning that anymore, and that property is no longer available for a single family rental. We've seen a considerable uptick in the number of those units that are now on the market, and you're also seeing a decline in actual single-family rentals that are available for folks. Those folks who might have a family, want more space, don't necessarily want to live in an apartment. So as you move forward and look at permanent decisions, I would hope that your technical advisory committee looks at policy as well, not just we already have the end in mind, which is sort of how the original ordinance was crafted, and then input was sought afterwards, that you would look at sort of what the consequences are of the decisions that you make if you're actually going to have the opposite impact that you all are looking for, which ultimately is what we're all looking for, which is significant increase in the supply, which will ultimately drive down some of the costs.
So, Mayor, can I just ask a question?
Commissioner Fish.
I'd love to see whatever data you have on this, so if you can supply it to us. And I'll just give you one example. For 20 years, I lived in Hollywood, and my next-door neighbor bought her bungalow, perfectly nice, two-bedroom home, in the 70s for about $40,000. She was a legal secretary. She raised her family. She had a tenant. She was a great neighbor. She ended up selling her bungalow at the beginning of the market uptick to a developer for about $400,000. Under our rules, we allowed the developer to take it down but keep the foundation, put a monster house on the lot, and sell it for $800,000. So one of the questions that I want to drill down on and look at your data is it the city council's regulations which you think are driving these decisions, or the fact that we're in an unprecedented market where people can make just the kinds of profits on the sale of homes were unimaginable 10 years ago. But I look forward to seeing your data.
Yeah, and Mr. Mayor, Commissioner Fish, I think it's not just decisions that are made at the city council level that are driving the cost of dirt up to such a level that you're talking about, where someone could purchase effectively a lot for $400,000 to build that new home on. That's effectively what they're doing when they're tearing down that bungalow. Our statewide land use system, by constraining development, is going to drive up the costs, and you have areas in the city of Portland now that where raw dirt without any services is going for $1.2 million an acre. So when you're looking at that cost, there's no way you're ever going to have an affordable unit on there, because by the time you pay your STCs and you put the sticks and bricks on there, the house is going to have to be in the $500,000 range.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioners. I had some testimony, but I think I'll make it really quick so I can get to some points about the amendments. I'm an attorney. I've worked some pro bono matters for relocation. I've helped tenants get paid under relocation. I want to support Commissioner Udaly's amendment. It's really hard to figure out, especially with the new rules, nested ownership and the structure of ownership. This is my job. I'm really good at it. I am particularly good at research. I have an impossible time figuring out what the ownership interests are. So the way the current rules are, they throw some tenants completely under the bus if they have a dishonest landlord. As for the amendments, I support both amendments, either amendment. I'd like to point out, though, that the current language, so this is 3001085B, says that the requirements do not apply, to tenants that occupy the same dwelling unit as the landlord. In the next sentence, it also says that the requirements do not apply, to a landlord, that only owns one dwelling unit. So those are separate sentences. And I would imagine that Commissioner Udaly's amendment was to strike that second sentence, leave the first sentence in place, which would preserve the exemption for people who live in the dwelling unit. Now, dwelling unit is interesting. In that same section, this is still 3001085B, later in the paragraph it says, for purposes of the exception, dwelling unit is defined by PCC 33910. Under 33910, dwelling unit references residential structure types. It just says see residential structure types. And there, accessory dwelling units is listed. So are triplexes, duplexes, et cetera. There's one more point of code, and it sounds like I'm about to run out of time. But 33207040B2 is explicitly allows a owner to treat the ADU as part of the residence, so they can live on either side. That doesn't really match the language of the code, and I think that that should be resolved. But I would say that you could simply define the ADU as the same dwelling unit and leave Commissioner Udaly's amendment in place exactly.
Can you submit that in an email just to us?
Absolutely.
And could you could you repeat your name again, please?
My name's Alan Kessler.
Thank you. I really appreciate this.
Thank you.
Obviously, there are lots of things to consider.
Great. Thank you, all three of you. We appreciate it. Next three, please.
Are Nicole Phillips, Craig Rogers, and Wayne W., and they will be followed by Marianne Drake, Mona Korvash, and Joe Walsh.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Do you want to go ahead and start, sir?
Oh, okay. It's convenient to point the finger at the developers and the politicians and whatnot. Out of respect for that, I should probably apologize to half the politicians and representatives in this room. But sometimes people can be their own worst enemy. Metaphorically speaking, if you wanted to bury everybody in this room, you wouldn't need to do much more than exactly what they're asking you to do. Trying to give everybody their own individual private unit, whether they can afford it or not, not only is a source of much economic inequality, but it's also been tried a number of times before with questionable results. More concerning to me is that owning your own individual unit has become the American standard. And if you can't meet that standard, then God help you, because there's no other options out there. Relying on government funds to keep a roof over our head, that is a sad testament to those before us, some of which who died for the sake of individual liberty. And yes, I believe liberty is tied to who pays your bills. Alternatively, smaller, isolated, and claustrophobic units, increasingly smaller units, they're good options to have, but they're not for everybody. So once again, what I always come here for, large-scale bunk housing, pod hostels, these forms of infrastructure being made on the monthly rental market with no strings attached, these are options we should at least explore before throwing all of our eggs in a government-funded basket or locking ourselves in closets. Privacy is good, but a rental market monopolized by physical privacy is not so good. The shelter model and charitable institutions in general are flawed concepts, as they implicitly assume that individual liberty is an expendable thing, and the majority of people end up paying the price for a few bad apples in those places. I mean, you got to wonder why they cut off access throughout the day, and people, you know, all these things. A lot of people don't know what shelters are like, but they're not humane alternatives. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Nicole Phillips. I'm speaking, of course, in support of permanentizing the relocation ordinance. I'll do this quickly. So in volunteering with a local social service organization, I ran into a family that was there for services because they'd spent the last of their money on a used car. They'd done this because, of course, they need to pick up extra shifts and things because they'd had a massive rent increase. The car was also Plan B in case they couldn't continue to pay the rent. They'd have a place to sleep at least. Because of like the massive amount of power given to property owners here, there are people paying more than half of their income to rent, terrified that they're going to receive that next rent increase that's just going to be too much. Or they're scared of a no-cause eviction, knowing that they don't have the thousands of dollars, and I mean thousands of dollars, that it's going to take to move. The Emergency Relocation Ordinance was a good first step in reducing that power balance. However, if we're serious about protecting tenants and fostering a city that is accessible to everyone, there are several things that we need to do. The first, of course, is making this ordinance permanent. I've heard the discussions, and I'm very happy to hear that you are in support of making that permanent. And I'm sure that, obviously, part of that was realizing that it worked. There are fewer of these massive increases. Fewer people are getting those no-cause evictions. Require property owners, obviously, to inform tenants about relo. That seems like a no-brainer, but obviously knowledge is power. And if you don't want to pay it out, you're not going to tell people about it. Remove the small landlord exemption. A property owner's investment property is a tenant's home. I don't mind. I guess we've discussed about a means-based exemption. But obviously, quite honestly, if you're concerned about your investment, maybe don't gouge your tenants for their rent or no cause evict them because they've become inconvenient. I also want to lower that trigger, like everyone else, from 10% to 5%. Number one, hearing things like 9.998, that's just evil. It really is. I don't know how anyone can do something so unconscionable. The other thing is that I spoke with a landlord at the Hawthorne Street Fair. Nice enough guy. He wanted an explanation as to why he should consider people when he's talking about his investment property. And one of the things that he said was that at 9.9%, he could regularly raise the rent and still be where he wanted to be, regardless of what happened to the people that he was renting to. So, thank you for your time. I'm looking forward to creating more ways to make this a city where we can all live, work, and play.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Craig Rogers, and I support these proposals before you today. I live in East Portland. I live across from the East Portland Community Center, Floyd Light Middle School, and East Portland Police Precinct. You'd think I wouldn't have any problem, but there's a heavily treed area right across from them. So I'll be speaking from my personal experience of that area. So the face of homelessness, what I see there, it's a woman with a black eye and a bloody nose. And I will be drawn to out in front of my house, and there's a woman that has the courage to leave her abusive partner, and she's sitting on the neighbor's hillside, and he's threatening to dump her cart with all her belongings in it. And that's the face of homelessness I want you to remember, because we need to solve these things. We need to create stability, and I've heard that word mentioned, and you're right on point with that, and I appreciate that. We need to understand that to a large degree, homelessness and heroin go hand in hand. And we need to seriously address that. We need people who are passionate and pay attention to detail. We need your help. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks, all three of you. Next three, please.
Are Marion Drake, Mona Corvash, and Joe Walsh. And they'll be followed by Lightning, Betty Holiday, and Margot Black.
Mr. Walsh, would you like to start?
Good morning. My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. I find myself agreeing with the city council. I find myself also acknowledging the superb work that Commissioner Udaly did on this and the council for allowing it to happen, because even though the idea is great, you still need 3 votes. So congratulations on your diplomacy. Congratulations on what you're doing and the amendments. We see our position on most of these items as a counter to what you're doing. We look at the negative side. Rarely do we get an opportunity to look at the positive side, and this seems to be really positive. You want to extend it 18 months, which is really good. We would also point out that we take some exception about the first year of the extension. And we realized you had an election, you had new people coming in, it was very confusing, so it ate up a lot of time. But on this one, we want you to do more. We don't want to lose people on the street this year. And if we do, and a coroner comes out like last year and says they shouldn't have died, that if we did something more, they would have lived, we will come here and we will yell at you. And I don't get up at 6 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday to get thrown out of here, believe it or not. I have other interesting things to do than get thrown out of City Hall. So, again, congratulations. I would take an exception to the 2-minute rule. People write their speeches. They take time off from work. You have to understand that. When I write speeches, and I don't do it very often, it's 3 minutes. I time it. So when you knock it down to 2, it throws everything up in the air. And that's unfair. You know, I can get past it because I've done this so many times now, I can do it off the top of my head most times. But people that come to you for the first time, they look, they write them out. They time them. So you should honor that. And I noticed that you're not doing the 2-minute rule stringently. You're giving people extra time, and I congratulate you on that. That's a very human connection. All right? But I've gone on too long saying nice things about you, and you're ruining my reputation.
I was going to say, I want to acknowledge that. And there's a balancing act here. I do want to be respectful of people's testimony, but it is very hard for us to predict in advance exactly how many people are going to want to come and testify. And 43 is a large number, so we combined the 2 ordinances to help speed it up so people wouldn't have to come up twice. They could leave. But the reality is we also have a jam-packed city council agenda for the entirety of the day. So as important as this subject is, there's lots of equally important issues that are also coming before the council, and we want to make sure that we get to those. So that's the tension. But thank you, sir.
When many people show up, you should be excited.
We
that's
are.
That's democracy.
Yeah, it's great. And it you is. Know? And it's, you know, it is a trade-off. And it's a real one, and as the presiding officer, it's
do
my
better.
Responsibility.
Do better on a trade-off.
Thank you, sir.
My name
good
is,
morning.
Good
Sorry.
Morning, Mayor Wheeler and Council. My name is Marion Drake. I support the statements of Representative Hernandez and Mr. Casey Jama that rent increases lower to 5% to make the reload permanent. I live in Section 42 tax credit housing, which has increased the retail rent 13%. In 18 months. I also recommend that the city make a resolution or a recommendation, whatever you call it, to set an example for the state to have rent control and end no-cause eviction. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Mona Korvash. I live in an apartment in Southwest Portland. I've lived there for about 4.5 years. When I moved in, my rent was $6.95, and then the rent increases started a little over a year ago. Usually, it's always been $100 at a time. So my rent is now $995. I'm disabled and on Social Security, and my Social Security check is $1,200 a month. So with just other basic bills, it's like way more than I get in Social Security. If it wasn't for other help that I've been lucky enough to get, like emergency utility assistance in the food bank, I don't know what I would be doing right now. And even still, I've gone hungry and had my electricity turned off a couple of times. The neighbors right around my place, like, there's different landlords, but when one of our rent gets raised, the others are quick to follow. And my neighbors recently had their rent raised just under the 10%. So I'm really worried because I don't know what I'll do if it gets raised anymore. The last raise that happened just after the reload rule was made, but I wasn't able to find out how to utilize the rule or the exact what it exactly said. So also education would be really helpful, because then by the time that I was able to find Portland Tenants United and figure it out, it was past the 15-day limit that was the rule at that time, and I was ineligible. So also, I agree with closing the small landlord loophole and with making it permanent. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Next three, please.
Our Lightning, Betty Holiday, and Margot Black. And they'll be followed by Julia DeGraw, Christina Dirks, and Dave King.
Margot, do you want to start us off, please?
Sure. Right. Yeah, I can. I was going to put something up on this computer.
Oh, okay. In that case, let's go to Lightning first. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Super Watchdog X. On the emergency designation, I do agree with that. But it's my understanding the governor stated not to use the state of emergency, so it would be called the city of emergency designation. I hope you check into that and hear back from the governor. Issue number two is that I'm absolutely against inclusionary zoning at this time. It needs to be looked at again. I think we're beginning to see developers place money in other locations, step away, step back. We need to correct that situation immediately. We're losing a tremendous amount of jobs. And again, my position, and a lot of people may disagree with me, we need more housing units built. If you have 10 people and you have 5 housing units, they're going to pick and choose who gets it. People are going to lose out. We need to balance out the overall inventory. That will begin to see rents begin to stabilize and lower. We're seeing that up in Seattle. We're seeing that in some other locations. Watch real close on when you begin to keep building more inventory. The issue on this relocation policy, I would like it to expire. I would like it to be refined more. I think we're beginning that loophole statement to see the utility costs shifted over and added on and given to the tenants, which in turn is a rent increase, which will be no penalties. And all that's going to happen, these tenants are going to end up not being able to make their rent. They're going to have to move. That's not the direction we want. We're having too much of a battle between the landlords and the tenants. It has to stop. Stop this immediately. It's not good. It's not going to work. And issue number three is that from my position, we want to make sure that if you're going to step in, I want to see a pay raise moratorium put on your salaries. And also, I want to see you work on cutting your water fees, your sewer fees, your garbage fees, and understand that also drops down the rent, and you control that. I want more skin in the game, cost you more money, and I guess what? You're going to build more units. And thank you very much, Mr. Salzman. That affordable housing bond, the best thing that ever happened to this city. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Betty Holiday. I have a very personal story to tell. I am a renter here in the city of Portland. I felt compelled to take time off from work today to testify. I work with the Department of Human Services, and I'm a graduate of Willamette Law School. In the past 2.5 years, I will have moved 3 times, 2 of them due to no-cause evictions. I left a Beaverton home when my landlords wanted to sell it to pay for their children's education. Understandable. After living in a very small furnished cottage for 1.5 years, I found a larger house. The owner had rented to the prior tenants for a little over 2 years while he worked in New York. His plans were to keep working out of town. I paid all the concomitant costs associated with a move again. 10 months later, after doing some traveling, my landlord told me he was coming back to his house to live. My year's lease ends on October 31st. My take on the single unit landlords is that they, like all other landlords, should be considered to be in a business. I heard Oregon House Representative Mark Meek tell one landlord in a town hall that she needed to be a responsible landlord. I would say that message rings true for all landlords. My landlord didn't understand the fragility of tenant stability. I am now paying the price for that, literally and figuratively. The city of Portland needs to set the expectation that even a single unit landlord is running a business. As such, he or she must be prepared to pay any cost of that business, including relocation costs for any tenants they no-cause evict, period. There may be a myriad of ways to get there, but we need to get there sooner rather than later. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Is it possible to put my picture up there? I don't know.
I think there you go.
Great. I'm just really proud of it. good morning, commissioners. My name is Margot Black. I'm an organizer with Portland Tenants United, which is a registered to lobby with the City of Portland. I'm supposed to say that, right? Mm-hmm. So before I begin, I want to thank that Betty was able to take work off to be here to testify, but I want to call your attention to all those who are not able to be here today. PTU did a lot of outreach to the many tenants who have been impacted by this historic policy, those who've been able to stay in their housing, those who've been displaced with dignity, and also those who have been left out with the exemption. Many of these folks wanted to but could not be here today because they are working. They're nurses, they're teachers, they're child care providers, they're bus drivers, they wait tables, they work at Safeway, they have sick kids. Being able to be here on a workday morning is a position of privilege, and I hope that the council realizes what voices are systematically left out in these hearings and how that underrepresentation is institutionalized by staffing commissions and advisory committees without those voices as well. One person who could not be here is Amanda Potter. After 11 years in her Mount Tabor Courtyard apartment, her landlord declined to renew her lease, being upfront about wanting to remodel and re-rent for hundreds more. She moved to that apartment with her toddler after her former apartment of 10 years was converted to condos. So she's moved both with and without relocation and would have loved to be here to tell you what a difference it made, and also to tell you that even with relocation, she had to move 200 blocks away and her daughter had to start middle school in a new city. And now as a Troutdale resident, she does not have that protection available. And Multnomah County has indicated to Portland Tenants United that it does not want to proceed with a relo policy until Portland has made theirs permanent. Portland's housing crisis doesn't end at our borders. $500 rent increases and no-cause evictions are becoming epidemic in Gresham. Cities and counties across the state need to see Portland demonstrate leadership on this policy by making it permanent today. I'm also here as a member of the Relocation Technical Advisory Committee to urge you to pass the amendment to protect all renters today. I want to remind you what relocation is for. It's not a fee or a fine. It is a real cost. I'm sorry, I'm just going to keep going. it's not a fee or a fine. It's a real cost that someone has to pay. If the landlord who chooses to force their tenants out doesn't pay it, then the tenant does, like Betty. It goes to application costs, double rent, security deposits, packing, moving, time off, work, and child care for all of the above. Time off work. Moving is expensive and traumatic, regardless of how many units your landlord owns. There are no protections, extra protections, for small tenants. There are no discounts for tenants with small landlords.
I'm not here to paint landlords as rich and greedy. I have no doubt that relocation might be a financial burden for some small landlords, but it is no less of a burden for their tenants. I know that they may be using their rental for retirement and to put their kids through college, but renters have kids in college too, and may someday want to retire. Our city, state, and country have failed us by tearing up the social safety net, but using renters to make up the difference isn't the answer. Please remember that these small landlords have something that their tenants don't: two homes. They are better off by every single metric than their tenants who own zero. And it makes no sense for the city to prioritize the financial security of those landlords over those with no financial security. Paying relocation will not force these landlords out of their homes and into their cars like the tenants who are denied it. I know you want to defer these questions to the relocation committee, but with all due respect, that's like deferring gun control and health care to Congress. There will not be consensus from a committee comprised of property managers and service providers. I am the only citizen activist on the committee, and only one, I believe, of two renters. But as a member of the committee, I would prefer to approach this question from the perspective of when should there be exemptions, why, and what does that process look like, rather than go back to the table with the bias of this hastily thought-out exemption to fight about it. Ultimately, we need to try to balance the wish lists of landlords and renters. We do not need to try to balance the wish lists, but we need to think about the value and purpose of this policy. City Council needs to decide what the value of this policy is and legislate based on that today. The policy isn't meant to punish landlords. It is meant to prevent and mitigate the impacts of displacement. The exemption categorically and unjustifiably leaves out a huge population of renters without asking who those renters are or why they are better equipped to shoulder the burden of this unplanned and unpredictable cost.
Margo, I'm sorry to interrupt. You're going on 5 minutes. Are you coming to a conclusion?
Yeah,
thank you.
I will.
Thank you.
Why don't I just say this, that I did ask that question. We know that the vast majority of unprotected tenants are in single-family residences. According to some data I got from Metro yesterday, this is 25% of Metro's of Portland's renter households. And the people who live in the single-family residences are people with kids and pets, people with disabilities who need the accessibility of homes, seniors and renters doubling up. As Betty stated, this is a business expense. It is reasonable for landlords who are business owners, and it must apply to all businesses, just like payroll taxes. Make this policy permanent today so renters can live without the anxiety of wondering, and education begin in earnest, and have the courage to legislate on the loophole today rather than hide behind the committee. Protect all renters and close the loophole.
Thank you.
And the next three are Julia DeGraw, Christina Dirks, and Dave King. And they'll be followed by Ethan Harrison, Adelpha Sanchez, and Mary Sipe.
How many more people are signed up?
After Dave King, I got 24 more.
Okay, folks, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but I am the timekeeper. Let's try. I'm hearing a lot of the same points. Try to keep it as close to 2 minutes as possible, just so we can get through this and get to all of the business that we have on the agenda. Thank you. If you'd like to start, please.
All right. My name is Julia DeGraw, and I live in the Montevilla neighborhood, and I am a candidate for Portland City Council. First off, I'd like to just start by saying that everyone, regardless of their income, race, or ability, should not have to worry about whether or not they have a place to sleep at night, a safe home. It's time we started treating housing as the human right that it clearly is. We cannot live without food, water, and shelter. It's as simple as that. So I'm here today to advocate not just for an extension of the housing emergency, which is clearly necessary, and for making the relocation ordinance permanent, but to encourage the city to go further to ensure that housing becomes more affordable and accessible to Portlanders desperately trying to both live and work in the city we all love. But this simple goal is challenging or impossible for an increasing number of Portlanders to achieve at this time. One policy the city could pursue is a vacancy tax, which could tax landlords who allow hundreds of units in the city to lie vacant in hopes of charging ever higher rents. A vacancy tax would encourage landlords to charge affordable rents and provide housing for more people. Now and in the long term, we need more housing, which is affordable to all Portlanders. Revenues from a vacancy tax would allow city to spend money needed to preserve existing affordable housing and take housing stock out of the dog-eat-dog private market and place it into community-based ownership, which would lead to a permanent affordability. Until a vacancy tax becomes a reality, and I believe it is not far off, there is something simple and moral the City Council can do to help thousands of tenants citywide right now. You can make the relocation ordinance permanent and make sure it applies to all landlords, not just the large ones. A 10% rent increase is unjust, period. And so is a 9.9 or 9.8 rent increase. The family thrown into homelessness does not suffer more or less based on whether or not the landlord owns one or many units. This is why I urge you not only to extend the housing emergency, which clearly needs to happen, but that you make the relocation ordinance permanent and ensure that it applies to all landlords. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioner. My name is Christina Dirks. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid Services of Oregon. I want to thank you all for your commitment to protecting renters from involuntary displacement. As a staff attorney at Legal Aid, we serve some of the lowest income folks in our community. My practice is solely in housing work. I represent low-income tenants in landlord-tenant matters and fair housing matters. I'm sure I don't need to tell you the statistics, but in Multnomah County, 136,000 people are at 100% of federal poverty guidelines, and we have roughly 1,200. To qualify for our services, someone has to make 1,200 a month or below. So we are dealing with very, very low-income individuals. Through my work at Legal Aid, I've observed the important and critical impact that the relocation ordinance has had. I staff our biweekly housing hotline where I talk to renters in crisis regularly. I would say before relocation ordinance passed, we would get a call about a no-cause notice, probably one in every three called. Since the passage of the relocation ordinance, we get very, very few calls about no-cause notices. We also get similarly very few calls about rent increases over 10% in the city of Portland. Unfortunately, we get all too many calls about 9.99% increases and that such. I have tons of case examples I can give you about the impact of relocation, but in the interest of time, I think I will just say to you that this ordinance should be made permanent in that it provides critical financial, educational, and emotional support for folks facing involuntary displacement. And I also wanted to express my support for the proposed amendment to lift the single landlord exemption. I'm sure you're going to hear from numerous landlords that will speak about their inability to afford relocation assistance. The fact is that tenants living in homes owned by small landlords are even less likely to be able to afford the cost of relocation. The policy rationale for this ordinance is to shift the significant cost of relocation from a landlord to a tenant, who is being involuntarily displaced due to no fault of their own. So council should really consider a policy decision from the perspective of not of which landlords can afford to pay it, but rather from the perspective of whether a tenant should be excluded from receiving relocation. I have advised numerous tenants, I apologize, I will finish real quick. I've advised numerous tenants of their ineligibility to obtain relocation assistance solely on this loophole. And I can tell you it is heartbreaking to witness tenants feel like have the rug pulled out from under them, not only the first time when they got the no-cause notice or the rent increase that they can't afford, but the second time when they're told they can't obtain relocation and they had no knowledge when they are renting a place whether their landlord owns more than one place or not, let alone can they usually do the research to find out whether their landlord owns one unit or more. And the other point I just want to make quickly is that many of our most valuable tenants in the community are renting from small landlords who only own one unit. These vulnerable tenants include individuals on fixed incomes who are renting rooms and houses with other tenants. They include folks that have barriers on their rental background that makes it impossible for them to qualify under screening criteria for some of the larger complexes in town, so they're living in mom-and-pop landlords' houses. I think there's also an important race equity consideration at play here that we need to talk about, which is that many of our tenants of color and our immigrant tenants are renting homes from small landlords due to family size doubling up.
Thank you.
Living with extended family.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name's Dave King, and my sweet wife and I have been landlords since the mid-70s. We have three houses right near our house in St. John's, and the income from those houses is our retirement. Our renters like us. We keep the rent low, and when something needs to be fixed, I'm right there. People feel they have a good deal, so they don't want to move, which is good for us because turnovers are a lot of work and expensive. We don't need to raise the rent much, so 10% or 5% is totally doable for us. That's fine. By the way, we support the ordinance and the amendment and like to make it permanent. There have been a couple times when we've had to evict people. The first time was a person who seemed to be using meth. He was building a shop in the basement and got busy and removed a post that supported the central wall, which supported the ridge of the house. He stopped paying rent because he said little worms were crawling out of the walls and embedding themselves in his arms. When no one was looking, they'd stick their heads up and look around. And that's why he stopped paying the rent. When we told him he'd have to pay the rent or move, little bugs or not, he got a lawyer, so we had to get a lawyer. And there were, it took a couple months. There were two hearings. His girlfriend went to the first one, but he never showed for the second. And after they moved before the sheriff came. It was no fun, but it only took a couple months and a few hundred dollars, and that's totally doable. There was another time when people just stopped paying the rent. Yeah, I said that we're supportive of what's before the council right now. We think it's terrible what's happening to renters in Portland. They need a lot more relief than this. The rental market's way out of control. We think it's up to the city to step in and regulate the banks and the landlords that are pricing people out of the city. The whole town's gentrifying, and you need to stop it. Mortgage rates and rents need to be controlled.
Thank you, sir. Thanks, all three of you. Next three, please.
Are Ethan Harrison, Adelpha Sanchez, and Mary Sipe. And they'll be followed by Mike Adara, Michael Hawkins, and Tony Tape.
Hi, my name is Ethan Harrison. My pronouns are they and them. I'd just like to note, I'm an organizer with Portland Tenants United. It's still unfortunate that the balcony is closed under the auspices of security, and that's really a shame. We should be able to have more people up there. I also was able to enter through the turnstiles today that Mayor Hales so thankfully removed, but I just want to note personally that's really unfortunate, having been at those city council meetings that you used as the guys to put those in. We should really have them taken away. A few notes for myself, and then I have testimony to read from Alicia Marie, who's a worker and resident tenant in Northeast Portland. As we've heard today, 10% is way too much, and landlords can get around it. It really should be 5% as well. Unfortunately, Commissioner Fritz is not here, but the technical advisor committee that is being cited as the reason to not pass this today is, as Margot noted, literally full of people who, as per the two meetings that I attended, throw around numbers in the millions. They're not representative of the community at all, and we really need to do more with regard to equity on those technical advisory committees. So pass it today, right? Like, you know, come back with amendments in December, but pass it today, you can do it. So as I mentioned, I'll read some testimony that was submitted by Alicia Marie. She is a worker as well and wasn't able to be here today. She offered this at the technical advisory committee that informed this ordinance. Shaky breath. She says, in January 2017, I received an email from my landlord giving me 90 days notice to find a new place to live. I wasn't a stranger to this situation as I had received a no-cause eviction just 6 months prior. Having to move twice in less than 1 year has been very taxing on me, both emotionally and financially. She writes, I wasn't able to afford the rental application fees and several thousand dollars in deposits, so I accrued a lot of credit card debt during that time. In both no-cause evictions, my rental units were owned by people who didn't consider themselves landlords. They purchased a second home to give them income as an investment for when the housing market picked up. Both of my landlords expressed sympathy for the situation that their tenants were now facing. However, each landlord also made almost triple the price that they initially paid for their home. So why did they get a pass from City Hall to no-cause evict me without any financial repercussions? When I learned of the tenant relocation ordinance, I thought there might be some relief. I would have made my move more accessible and lessen the unexpected burden I was facing. Unfortunately, the current protections don't apply to small landlords like mine or many of my friends who have faced evictions as well. She goes on to say that she would like for the single exemption to be removed. I look up and the mayor has taken leave. And I stand in solidarity with her and with the previously cited amount of Portland renters who would be positively affected. And Commissioner Fritz, good to see you. I was noting that we shouldn't hide behind the technical advisory committee because it is ill representative of our community. Having attended two meetings, there were only, as Margot noted, two renters on the committee, and the rest are people who are millionaires and/or their representatives. Thank you for your time.
Okay, I'll try and put this all concisely together. I definitely support the ordinance to extend the housing emergency, but I do have some concerns in that when I look around and I see how many people are still on the streets in tents, I feel like we're sticking our finger in a hole in the dike that this big round and it's like water in a balloon. We fix it here and it pops out over there. And so what that makes me think about is why is this? Why is it no matter what we do, it's not enough? There's still people out there. And there's a couple of things that concern me, and I've talked about this before. I live in Section 42 housing, and I've shared with you how one of my concerns is that there are people living in Section 42 housing, the building where I live, who actually no longer meet the financial limits. One individual in particular who actually owns a condominium, and she rents out that condominium, and it's not considered income. She actually bragged to me how she, when her tenants moved out, she made some improvements, and now she's getting more rent for it. I think we need to look very hard at the people that are currently living in these buildings, and if they don't qualify financially, they need to go. It used to take about 6 to 9 months on the waiting list to get into the building that I live in. It now takes 3 to 4 years. There are 350 people on the waiting list in the building where I live. We're not going to have another 350 units overnight. It's going to be another 2 years before we have those. Quickly, I want to reiterate what the very first person, Holly Hansen, talked about, and that is the danger of people like myself who are on fixed incomes, who have only source of income is Social Security. And when they decide that this building no longer is going to be Section 42, what happens to those people? I think we need to put all of these buildings into a pool and one waiting list. And if you're getting kicked out of a building like Holly is because they're no longer going to make that commitment that they made, then you go to the top of the waiting list. And for all of the buildings that are there. And just one quick thing. I know I'm running out of time.
You have run out of time.
Oh, I am. I'm sorry. Okay, well, I'll wrap it up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Buenos días, señores del jurado.
Good morning, members of the council.
Y personas que nos acompañan.
And all of those who are here accompanying us.
Mi nombre es Adelfa Sánchez.
My name is Adelfa Sánchez.
Tengo a mi esposo y tres hijos.
I have a husband and three children.
Yo vengo aquí porque estoy apoyando la ley de asistencia para mudanza.
And I'm here to support the ordinance for relocation assistance.
Que protege a los inquilinos de Portland.
That protects Portland tenants.
Nosotros fuimos apoyados por esta ley.
We were supported by this law.
Y les pedimos a ustedes que tienen el poder.
And I ask those of you who have the power
que sigan apoyándonos con esta ley,
that you continue to support us with this ordinance,
ya que es de gran ayuda para todas las personas.
Because it's a great help for all people.
Sufrimos de una propiedad, casa o apartamento.
For all people who suffer living in a property, whether it's a house or an apartment as renters.
Es muy duro quedarse sin hogar.
It is very difficult to find yourself without a home.
Yo y mi familia personalmente ya tuvimos dos experiencias.
My family and I have experienced this two times.
De quedarnos sin vivienda.
Being without a home.
Cuando viví en Normandy y me dieron la noticia de que iba a pagar doble renta.
When I was living in the Normandy apartments in the Cully neighborhood in Northeast Portland, they gave us the notice that we were going to have to pay double our rent.
Fue una pesadilla fuerte para mí.
And it was a horrible nightmare.
Me gustaría que en lugar de quitar esta ley de inquilinos,
I would like that instead of removing this law that protects renters,
que al contrario nos brindaran más apoyo para implementar algunas otras leyes más.
that, on the contrary, that you would give us even more support and pass even stronger laws.
Y que fueran permanentes.
And that they be permanent laws.
Les agradecería mucho por su apoyo.
I thank you very much for your support.
Ya que todas las familias necesitamos esa ley.
All of the families need this ordinance.
Muchas gracias, señores del jurado. Les deseo un bonito día.
Thank you, members of the council, and I wish you a good day.
Thank you all.
Adelfa and I are members of the Cali Housing Action Team in Northeast Portland, a group of neighbors working to create stable housing and resist displacement. And at our monthly meeting last night, we signed this card that we would like to give to you that says, the Cali Housing Action Team says, Portland renters need relo. Please extend the emergency rental relocation ordinance. And
thank you. Could you put your name in the record as well, please?
What's that?
Put your name in the record.
My name is Mira Conklin.
Thank you. If you could give it to Carla, thank you. The next three, please.
Our Mike Adara, Michael Hawkins, and Tony Tape, and they'll be followed by Matilda Bickers, Lior Schweitzer, and Daniel Whitaker.
Okay, please start.
Okay, my name is Mike Edera, and I live in Southeast Portland.
I'm sorry, could you turn that mic on? Somebody turned it off. Yeah, just press the gray button. Thank you.
Got it. Okay. My name is Mike Edera, and I live in Southeast Portland. I also rent one house out, and that makes me a small landlord. I've always, you know, rented it out for below market rate, and the relocation ordinance doesn't inconvenience me, hasn't inconvenienced me. Other people have spoken to the basic day-to-day problems of being a landlord, but I'm not worried about the relocation ordinance. I'm also a father of an adult son who has a severe mental illness. And one of the big contributing factors to his relapse this year has been impossibility of finding independent housing. His condition has actually cost this city and the county a lot of money in this year. Much of that would have been unnecessary if he had been able to find a place to live by himself. It really contributed to his condition. Here's the truth about small landlords, so-called small landlords. We live in the community. We're affected by the emergency, the housing emergency. Peripherally, we have family members who are undergoing the stress of the housing crisis. We don't have corporate fortunes to buffer us. I've spoken to a lot of landlords who make the same argument. Basically, the way I look at the speculation that's been happening in this town is that it's just like it's just like an industry dumping pollution in the river. It's a peripheral expense that they hope other people will pay for. That's why I think this ordinance should be permanent. We should reduce the threshold to 5%, and we should eliminate the single landlord clause. Thanks.
Thank you. Good morning.
My name is Emily Schnipper, and I'm reading testimony from Michael Hawkins, who could not be here today. My name is Michael Hawkins, and since 2011, I lived in a triplex in Selwood. I lived in a unit upstairs, and another tenant lived in the basement unit with his three sons. The landlord lived in the other upstairs unit and also owned a few other houses elsewhere. This past summer, both me and the other tenant who rented the basement apartment were given a 90-day no-cause eviction notice. We were later told by the landlord that she desired to sell her place or have it torn down in order to build a 6-to-10-unit condominium on her lot. When the other tenant and I asked her about the relocation fee, she initially acted as if she were unaware of the law, then later in the same conversation stated that she had already talked with her real estate attorneys about the law and said she was exempt since we were all roommates. When we pointed out that all three units met the legal definition of a dwelling space, separate entrances, kitchens, bedrooms, and bathrooms, she insisted that her lawyers had told her otherwise and told me I was lucky to have lived there as long as I did. So began my long search for another home. By this time, I only had 30 days left since she had given me the notice when I was out of town visiting my kids and family in another state for 6 weeks.
At this point, I pursued legal action. However, my attorney told me that although I had a good case, it would be 6 months or longer before we saw any results, even if we won. Meanwhile, I ran out of time and money to move and ended up living in a tent in a friend's backyard for 5 weeks with my son before we found a new place, which was smaller and cost me twice as much in rent. It has now been 60 days, and she has still refused to pay either the relo fee or return our $600 deposit, but instead sent me an invoice for $2,800, claiming damages to her floor, windows, missing smoke detectors, all of which was undocumented, fabrications of things we never knew were missing in the first place. All my savings were drained because of this move. Why do I have to take legal action and pay for the upfront cost? I'm given legal options, but the results of any possible justice are slow to take place. Who can wait half a year for the small court system to work? It leaves me mentally, financially, and emotionally exhausted, all the while she now rents those units on Airbnb for double or triple the profit. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, or good morning, sorry.
Good morning. My name is Tony Tappe, and I'm a landlord for the last 10 years. I own a four-unit rental building and a rental home, so I do not qualify as a small landlord. I fully support the extension and expansion of RELO. It is my view that these measures do not impose an unreasonable burden to attentive and competent landlords. If a landlord plans and budgets like I do, increases below 5% are sufficient to maintain and improve properties. I view measures such as this ordinance the same way that I view a minimum wage. As a business owner, there are no exceptions for paying minimum wage. If I'm having a bad month, I do not get to lower the wage of employees. At this point, I don't have employees yet. I'm that small. To me, a lot of this falls under the privatizing profits and socializing losses. That is how a lot of landlords are able to make the money they do. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, all three of you. Next three, please.
Are Matilda Bickers, Lior Schweitzer, and Daniel Whitaker, and they'll be followed by Sarah Chandler, Kelly Francois, and Eli Spivak.
Good morning.
Hi. I'm so nervous.
Don't be nervous.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you because your relocation ordinance... Am I too loud? I can't tell.
No, it's good.
It's right.
Okay. It saved me. Last Monday, I got a notice from my landlady. She was raising my rent $250 from $1,300 to $1,550. And I sat there in my yard crying and talking to my dad. And then I found out that I'm still covered by the relocation ordinance. So there followed some negotiations between me and my landlady as she lowered my rent increase incrementally until she finally realized that she had to lower it below 10%. And so now it's a $60 increase. But I know that if we don't pass this again in December, I'm looking at another increase. But I'd like to back up for a second. So people keep talking about small landlords like they're trustworthy members of our community and like they're really good people. My landlady qualifies as a small landlord. Probably she owns a couple different places in Portland. She's a slumlord. She's found ways to charge me money that you couldn't imagine as long as you're reasonably ethical. When I first moved in, she kept my trash service off until I paid her an extra $200 to turn it back on. It's $58 every 2 months. There are ways for landlords to make money if they're unethical, that they find loopholes. They don't need to be protected. We need to be protected. So I don't have a fire detector in my unit. There's all this stuff wrong. My water heater broke in August, and I knew as soon as I looked up how much a water heater costs that I would be seeing a rent increase so that she could recoup what she was spending on it. I debated telling her, and on the advice of Margot Black and some other people, I did tell her. My basement flooded for 5 days before she did anything about it, and in part that's because I pay water. So it didn't cost her anything to leave me with a flooded basement for days and days. I just... You have no idea what it's like for tenants. That's all I have to say. I'm sorry.
Could you just give us your name again, please?
I'm Matilda.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for letting me speak. I'm going to really severely amend what I wanted to say because so many people have echoed this. I want to begin just really quickly by saying thanks to all of you guys for the work that you've done to help renters here. When I moved here 2 years ago from San Francisco, I was flabbergasted at the few laws there were here to protect people. I could not believe that there was literally nothing to protect renters here. And I realized we're all playing catch-up because the rents went up so dramatically, so quickly. And I'm heartened to see all of these changes made so fast to help so many people that are desperate for help. I specifically want to thank Commissioner Udaly for just getting the ball rolling on so much of this stuff so fast after you got into office. Chloe, you're a hero to so many people in this city. Without all of this work that you all are doing,